Hey, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salison from the Hazmat Guys.
Welcome back to another amazing bonus episode where we're going to bring you some information from one of our sponsors, but not just a sponsor, also some really good technical information and things that we definitely want to share with you.
Yeah, guys, you know us here at the podcast, we like to bring you the best that we can, and today we're bringing you people from DuPont. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty about some of the new emerging technologies, some things that are coming out about the company philosophy. So take a moment to look at their products, support their show, and we are happy to be back here with Dan Bowen.
Good morning, Dan.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Another beautiful day in paradise.
Oh, it really is.
Do me a favor, just reintroduce yourselves to the listeners. Remind them of who you are.
So my name is Dan Bowen. I'm the technical specialist for DuPont Protection Technologies. In my role, I support our what we refer to as our garments business. And you know, of course, in the hazmat space, we're used to chemical protective garments, but DuPont has a full range of everything from keep clean, dirty job suits all the way on up to, fully encapsulated FP and 1991 certified level A garments and everything in between. And in my role, I support those products with both our distribution. You know, we sell through a range of distributors, but also with end users. And once again, I spend time with a extremely wide range of applications, spend time certainly with fire service and law enforcement, but I also support industrial users as well. So I get to see a lot of very unique applications for chemical protective apparel in the industrial space. And, I spend a lot of time traveling around and meeting a lot of interesting people and seeing a lot of very, very unique applications for chemical protection.
I'm sure you have. I can imagine. You know, like and one of the topics that we're going to be talking about today is the boogeyman in the room, I guess, right? The 800-pound gorilla.
Wait, you're not talking about the F-word.
Oh, yes, I'm talking about. I heard a rumor that if you at midnight you said fentanyl three times into the mirror, it will jump out of the sink and kill you. I heard
There's a lot of those out there.
It's incredible.
You have information for us on fentanyl and PPE. There's been a lot of conflicting information out there as far as what people should wear. I don't know if it's so much conflicting information as just differences of opinions. But as a chemical protection specialist, what are your thoughts on fentanyl?
Yeah, so there's been a tremendous amount of news coverage recently on fentanyl. There's been a tremendous amount of activity and focus on it from both law enforcement and fire service perspective. And yeah, I know there's a perception there's been some conflicting information out there, but I prefer to look at it as it's not conflicting, it's just information. There's been a lot of information circulating around the fentanyl hazard. And the problem that I see right now is it's kind of like when we had the Ebola situation in the United States. You know, in my role, my phone was ringing off the hook. And people would always ask the same question, what do I do about Ebola? Well, there's no one answer, right? My response was always, well, what are you doing with it? And I look at fentanyl the same way. You know, there's this perception that, oh, there's some magic bullet, some magic answer on what do we do about fentanyl. And the reality is it's a hazard that's popping up across the country now, but there's many different situations in terms of the way that first responders need to deal with this particular material, and you've got to tailor your response to the particular function that you're going to be doing that's going to have you in contact with the hazard. You know, and I look at it, it's a learning experience. If we go back to bad things that happened in this country, right? We had Katrina, we had Sandy, we had 9/11, we had Ebola. You know, during all of those things, we responded the best we could when they were going on, but as time went on, our response agencies learned where some of the deficiencies or lack of knowledge were in their response processes, and we fine-tuned them, we tweaked them, and we made ourselves better. And I think fentanyl's got to be approached the same way, that this is a problem that's popping up across the country in many different ways, and there's a learning curve associated with it, and we just have to take a little bit more pragmatic approach to it.
When you say that it's kind of like a function based, and what you're doing, how would like my role as a firefighter differ from a role as a, say, a police officer?
Yeah, great, Great question. Great question. So, you know, I spend, as I said in the intro, I spend a lot of time with industrial users. And first and foremost, when you're dealing with a particular hazardous material in an industrial setting, there's always, you know, two questions that I ask. One is, what are you dealing with, right? So the what are you dealing with is going to provide me a guide to or an input to try and figure out what materials, what, you know, specifically in my role, what chemical protective fabrics are going to be suited for that particular material. But the second question is always, what are you doing with it? And the what are you doing with it is what's going to lead you to a particular ensemble, a garment configuration ensemble of all the things that are going to be used together. And as you said, you know, law enforcement and fire service have two relatively different roles usually in a drug interdiction, whether it's a clandestine drug lag response, it might be an EMT response. But, you know, if we think about the role where we've got a joint response, where we're going to have law enforcement and fire service on site, usually fire service is providing a couple key functions. You're going to have EMTs, right? There's going to be first aid people on site in case there is some kind of an exposure that needs to be responded to and you have to, you know, you have to deal with a medical emergency. The second thing is that in many cases, you know, certainly around, you know, not necessarily so much with fentanyl, but certainly around meth labs, the other function fire service had was, you know, hey, we've got our fire response equipment there. If we have some sort of a flash incident because of the materials that are being involved, you know, we're going to be there to suppress fire. So the functions are very different when you think about a hazmat response, and you need to go through, you know, and it's going to run a very wide gamut, right? I know there's been one agency said that, well, we consider all fentanyl responses to be a level A response. Well, the problem with that is if you're an EMT, you know, anybody that's ever worn a level A suit, it's going to be really, really hard to administer to a patient in a level A suit. So if you're going out on a first aid call because somebody's overdosed, the hazard is potentially there, but your PPE really needs to be tailored so that you can both protect yourself and also do the job. And, you know, that's where some of the challenges come in.
You know, it's kind of funny because when we talk to people that are in EMS or fire and they're making these entries, you know, and they're thinking, okay, it's level A, I got to go in there, but they have the homeowner is sitting in a wife beater and he's like, what are you guys doing in here? And he doesn't have any PPE. Nothing. And so we kind of like laugh about it. We're like, well, why? You know, the IAB, as you guys just was going into, the IAB just put out a document that was very mission specific and it was refreshing.
Yeah, and I think that's where some of the concern or the what we refer to as conflicting information's come out. You know, you're right. The bad guys that are dealing with this stuff, they're not wearing PPE. You know, okay, maybe a couple in an advanced lab in some other foreign country that are manufacturing it, they might be. You know, but the street guys, for the most part, they're not exactly concerned about industrial hygiene and safety of their folks. So, you know, you've got that extreme, and on the other end, we've got a group of people say, hey, it's all got to be a level A. So somewhere in between their lies, really. And I think part of the challenge is that there's been a little bit of confusion or misinformation around the hazard itself, right? So fentanyl, there was, there's been a kind of a hysteria over it in that there was a perception among certain folks that, oh, if I get a couple specks of it on my skin, you know, I could potentially die. Well, I think that over the last couple of months, what's happened is knowledgeable folks in the chemical and the medical community have come out and said that dermal exposure, skin, is not necessarily that dangerous of a route of entry. Yes, it will go through skin, but it takes a long time at very high concentrations, right? So unless there's a breach in the skin, right? If you've got a lesion, you got a cut, you got a sore, you've got some break in the skin, different story, right? Absolutely different story. But in terms of a dermal hazard, it's not all that extreme. However, you know, your primary routes of entry are going to be what? Your respiratory and your mucous membranes, right? So you've got to make sure you're protecting accordingly for the routes of entry where it is absolutely positively a known hazard.
Right. All right. So let me ask you this. If you're making entry, you're on the team, you're making entry, how would you approach it? I mean, obviously, it's going to be mission specific and depending on what department you're working on, but how would you approach the scene? Would it be more of a a defensive posture? Would you go in and like vent as you go? What would be your thoughts? You know, wearing the proper PPE, would you let's just start slapping this stuff around?
Yeah. So you know, the first and foremost, you got to realize that the material it's considered a solid. Okay. Yeah, it's a powder, right? But in the chemical space, we consider it a solid. And one of the challenges you've got with solids is there's no permeation data for solids, right? So you're not going to have test data that says, oh, this particular material is going to protect you from fentanyl because it's a solid. You can't permeation test solids. So when you think about it, one of the ways you might want to approach it is think about it like an asbestos hazard, for example, right? You know, asbestos it's not a dermal hazard. It's a respiratory hazard. And the main reason that people that work around the material are wearing various levels of PPE. Yes, number one, we're trying to prevent it from getting into the lungs and the digestive system of workers. But the other thing we're doing is trying to keep the hazard at the job site. And when we look at a fentanyl entry, same two concerns. Number one, you want to make sure that you're providing the appropriate level of protection for the responder for the job that they're doing. And number two, you want to try and keep that material at the job site. You want to keep it contained, right? So venting it to the outside world is probably not not going to be an approach that's going to sit well with a lot of folks. But in terms of the PPE question on it, there's a pretty wide range, right? Well, a level A suit will absolutely positively protect you from the hazard. It may be overkill in some cases. So let's explore that a little bit deeper. So one of the reasons why an encapsulated level A response is recommended is the breathing apparatus. Not that the fentanyl is necessarily going to damage it, but that breathing apparatus is not an inexpensive piece of equipment. You're going to spend $4,000 or $5,000, maybe more, depending upon what add-ons you've got on your SCBA equipment, on a single piece of gear. And if you get it contaminated, now you've got a challenge. How do we deal with that? So part of the reason that we're looking at some of these responses as a level A is we want to make sure that there's no way that we're going to be taking the bad stuff out of the environment and putting it on for example, a SCBA harness that now runs the risk of further contaminating someone or something down the road. But as a powder hazard, an SCBA is not the only potential solution for a respiratory powder hazard. There's certainly many other options that are out there. So, for example, you know, you could look at utilizing a full face piece, cartridge style or PAPR respirator, positive airflow PAPR, that would provide the correct level of particle holdout for it. And because of the radically lower cost on those, don't even worry about decon. At the end of your operation, pack it out with the rest of the hazardous waste at the end of it. You know, they're relatively low cost. Use them as a consumable in that type of a response. So,
Are you talking about the PAPRs that would be very similar to like the ones used in the hospitals during the first receiver program for Ebola?
Yes, and there's a wide range of PAPR configurations. So there's everything from just a bar that goes around inside a hard hat and blows air down over a worker's face to something that's more elaborate with a face piece on it, or even just a standard cartridge style face piece respirator. If you could ensure a good seal on that so that there's no way that the material is going to come around the edges of it, the magenta colored particle filters are going to provide a level of protection from particle hazards. And really you need to look at the range of hazards and jobs people are doing with that hazard and come up with the most appropriate level of PPE that's going to still give you the highest level of protection but allow you to do that job.
I love it because, that's what it's not our stance. It's kind of like science. And why? Because science, it is a respiratory thing. And it's refreshing for a suit manufacturer to say that, yeah, it's not really a dermal thing. But that is one of the things where people are saying, well, if it gets on my SCBA and my next tour or my relief grabs that SCBA, he's going to get exposed. That's why we're putting it inside the level A, which, again, you can't do with your level B, a level A type 2, and stuff like that. So is there what are your thoughts on maybe putting like a pack cover or something like that on it?
Well, there's a couple of different ways to approach this. You know, there are if you're going to wear the SCBA on the if you're going to use a SCBA, so you're going to do a level A type response. One of the options you've got is to look at an encapsulated level B, right? It's going to be a lower cost suit. It's still going to cover up that breathing apparatus, right? So that it's many of us manufacturers offer encapsulated level B suits. So you're wearing the SCBA inside the encapsulated suit. The difference is it's not a vapor tight suit. So it's going to be a chemical protective fabric, for example. It's going to have the polymers, you know, the plastic type materials on the outside of the suit. The inside of that fabric might be a non-woven material like Tyvek, for example, or polypropylene. So it's going to be a lower cost, usually lighter weight garment. It's still an encapsulated suit, right? So you're still going to have the challenges of working in an encapsulated suit, but now that SCBA is on the inside with you. But it's a little bit less stressful on the wear, just because it's a lighter weight fabric. It's not going to be a vapor tight situation. So that's certainly one option. The other thing to think about is decontamination. I know we've had some other, or you guys have had some other guests on some of the other podcasts where the information was provided that parasitic acid at a relatively low concentration is 100% effective at neutralizing fentanyl. So, you know, the question is, if we know we're going to have fentanyl responses on a regular basis, parasitic acid is a relatively common industrial chemical that's used for sanitization and food service, for example. If we know we're going to be facing this hazard on a more regular basis, just because it's becoming more popular with the drug community, do we take a look at changing our decon procedures? And if you've got a fentanyl response, do you have the capability to utilize a material like parasitic acid that would neutralize that particular material?
Very nice. Very nice. So
awesome.
When you take all of this into consideration, if you were going in, say, as a firefighter, how do you approach selecting your PPE?
Well, what's my role, right? We come back to that initial question of everybody wants the answer for this particular hazard. Well, if I'm going in as a firefighter, what am I doing? Am I an EMT? Am I backup for law enforcement? What is my function in that particular response? And my guidance is take a key from the industrial sector, and we always start with a hazard analysis. So let's back up. Another perspective of this. There's also a concern about liability, right? God forbid somebody gets hurt. Management and various organizations want to make sure, number one, you want to make sure you keep people safe, right? That's job one. But number two, if somebody does get hurt, there's a concern about where does the buck stop in terms of the chain of liability. Mm-hmm. Well, in the industrial space, what OSHA requires all industrial people who work with hazardous stuff to do is to conduct a hazardous analysis, document it, and then provide the correct level of protection for their people for that particular level of hazard. So for fire service and fentanyl, you guys might end up with a tiered response approach. Level A might be the correct approach in a given situation, but there may be other scenarios where you're going in as a support function where you're not necessarily going to have hardly any opportunity to come in direct contact with the material. Perhaps a scale back level of PPE is appropriate there. For example, you can get a level B, level C coverall type garment that is pretty much liquid tight, right? Top to bottom, except for the hood. You can get them with attached gloves. You can get them with attached socks. You can get them with multiple storm flaps on the zippers. A garment like that is going to keep particles out. And there may be response functions where a level B or level C type garment configuration with the appropriate respiratory protection, with the appropriate decon procedures and materials set up, would be fully acceptable in terms of keeping people safe.
Right. And I love that because you know what? You have a million options that you can do to affect the rescue because, it's life safety and then it's, property and all the other jazz. So I can really custom. And now you guys at DuPont, and I'm again, not, but you guys have unlimited option. I mean, I don't have to buy the one off the shelf, right? I can say, listen, I want the socks only, or I want the sonically welded gloves, or I want a gasket on the face. I can do whatever I feel like, right?
There's a really wide range of options in the product portfolios from certainly from DuPont, but other chemical suit manufacturers as well. You know, we've tried to tailor the product line so that it fits the needs of the end users, whether that's fire service, law enforcement, or industrial users. You know, there's things in the industrial space that you guys would never even think about using on fire service, right? Because it's not appropriate for the job you're doing with the products, and vice versa. So, yeah, there's a real wide range of options that are out there in terms of PPE configurations. And, of course, if an opportunity or I shouldn't say well, it is. It's an opportunity, right? We're a business at the end of the day. If an opportunity in the form of a new hazard comes up, I suppose that's probably the more correct way of phrasing it. If that opportunity arises because some new hazard is being faced by either our fire service, law enforcement, industrial workers, we'll respond with a garment configuration that's tailored to that specific hazard. So, absolutely, you know, if you guys have got ideas on, hey, you know, this would be a great thing to have, bring them to us and we'll take a look at it.
All right. So, what else do we need to consider as far as from your perspective as a manufacturer of suits? What do you think is coming up? What do we need to consider on this?
Well, you know, I think that right off the bat, we need to set a stake in the ground that says, for the most part, general protection fabrics are probably not, you know, the breathable, lighter weight, disposable garments are probably not a wise option for most of the applications with fentanyl because it is a powder hazard. I said earlier that, you know, you can't do permeation testing on solids, so there's not going to be any permeation data that says, oh, this fabric's going to protect you from this material. The testing that is done for solids or particles is an airflow test where a stream of air is placed against a fabric and materials are put in that airflow stream and then tried to be detected on the other side coming through. All of the chemical protective fabric, so anything that has a Ti-Chem name in front of it on the DuPont line, air doesn't go through it. So if air doesn't go through it, you can't do a particle test on it, which means it's going to give you essentially 100% particle holdout for anything that comes in contact with it that's a solid or a particle. So number one, I would probably shy away from some of the lighter weight general protection fabrics. Second, seams. I would not approach any of these hazards with a sewn seam type garment because you know, well, it's unlikely that particles are going to find their way through. You know, if you think about it, what's a seam? It's a series of a million holes, right? when you're dealing with a particle hazard, I would probably err on the side of caution and make sure that any garment configuration that I'm using is going to be it's going to have tape seams. I don't want to have any possibility for that material coming through a seam on a garment. And of course, when you go through decon, you've got the possibility of flushing that material through one of those seams if it's a sewn seam, right? So there's a number of reasons why you'd want to go with a tape seam type garment as opposed to a sewn seam, you know. And then the last piece of it is you really need to look at the job, you know, the function that people are doing with the hazard, what the exposure scenarios are, and what's the most appropriate level of PPE. And, you know, because you still got to be able to do your job at the end of the day. You know, it's not a lot of fun wearing a level A suit. As I said earlier, there's certain functions like administering to a patient with an EMT. You know, imagine trying to get an IV needle in somebody's arm wearing a level A suit configuration where you've got three or four gloves on your hand and, you know, you can barely see because you're wearing a respirator face piece inside. You got the visor on the outside and, you know, there's just some functions that it's not feasible or likely that you're going to be able to do an effective job if you're wearing the highest level of protection that is available. You really need to tailor your PPE response to the hazard and the job people are doing. You know, you want the highest level of protection to still protect you from that hazard, but you got to be able to do the job at the end of the day as well.
I love it. You know what? Me and Mike just came back from the Massachusetts Hazmat Conference, one of our favorites, and one of our friends in Massachusetts came up to us and he pulled us into the closet, literally pulled us into the closet. He goes, I got to ask you guys a question. One of the manufacturers that was at the show said that if they have a fentanyl run or some white powder run, that they can wash off their suits and reuse them. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, once again, you know, it's a solid hazard, so there's no permeation data. It's a particle, so it's right. not going to go through the suit. The challenge you've got is, you know, I'm going to say it again. I said it on our last episode. I don't like the word decon, because the word decon gives people the impression that we've somehow neutralized the challenge material. And in the hazmat space, the reason for decon is to get enough of the bad stuff off the outside of the suit to get the human being out of the suit safely, and that's where it ends. So, you know, fentanyl is not highly soluble in water. Well, most of the decon solutions we use are water, right? So how do you know you got it all off? If you were going to take that approach, you'd have to be using something like parasitic acid and a full dip, right? You'd have to be completely immersing these garments. I don't know if the view's worth the climb in terms of setting up the apparatus, the personnel. And, of course, when you're doing that, somebody's going to have to be wearing some level of protection to handle a contaminated garment that you're now going to try and dip in a tank of parasitic acid. You know, I'm not sure the view is worth the climb on trying to reuse them. You know, and those are the reasons why. You know, you end up with a little crease someplace, and, you know, maybe there's a little bit of that powder stuck underneath that crease. How do you know for sure that you got it out? How do you know for sure that the liquid got all the way in there? You know, it's not like acid where litmus paper, you know, is going to tell you whether, hey, you know, the pH is 0 or the pH is 7 or the pH is, you know, 9 or whatever. There's no real litmus paper test that you could use on a suit to know that, oh, yeah, I got it all off. You know, so, yep, if you were to take a level A suit and completely dip it in a solution or let it soak in a solution of parasitic acid, okay, maybe it might neutralize. But I'm not sure that the view is worth the climb
that
on that
makes
one.
Makes absolute sense. I could just imagine a person laying in a giant decon pool like a donut frying in a deep fryer, and in 5 minutes he gets flipped over to get the other side.
Yeah, not exactly
not.
A viable workflow, right?
All right, so to kind of give a quick wrap up here, especially when we're thinking about the fentanyl, it kind of comes back into what we say a lot, which is to approach every situation like a child. Think of it like a child. Don't come in with a preconceived notion. Take in all the information that you can before you make a decision. Don't, you know, pull up on scene going, this is fentanyl. I'm gonna throw on a level C or a level B. Wait to find out what the situation is. Wait to find out what your job and your role is, and make the best decision that balances your protection from the chemical versus your protection during actual physical function. Is that pretty?
Absolutely, positively. That is the correct approach. You know, you need to approach it from a pragmatic perspective of, hey, what am I dealing with and what's the appropriate level? And, of course, you guys probably, as hazmat responds, you probably need a pre-thought-out range of options in terms of your PPE configuration. You know, the gloves, the respirator, the decon, all the different procedures you're going to use, disposal of material afterwards, et cetera, right? You need to think all that through, but a range of options is the correct way to go, because, you know, not every single one of these responses is going to require everybody to suit up in a level A suit.
Okay, so Dan, if somebody does want to fully increase their warehouse with materials and suits that could really get a good grasp on all the different functions that are out there, they can go to you or DuPont to get further information on these suits?
Yeah, absolutely. We've tried to put we've developed a couple of different software tools to put all the information about our products at end users' fingertips. And oh, by the way, one of the things that's on the website is what I call white papers. Basically, when something bad or weird happens in the United States and we've got to respond to it with PPE solutions, DuPont generally tries relatively quickly to develop a white paper that isn't a sales pitch. Basically, it's, hey, here's what the hazard is. Here's how you need to think about it. We're in the process of putting one of those up on the website for fentanyl. By the time this podcast airs, it should be up live. The website is SafeSpec, SafeSpec.dupont.com. And on that website, you'll find a range of options. You know, for chemical hazards, all the permeation data, the database is present on that particular website. And all the white papers are in the library tab for each product. Every single product is there with the tech data sheets on it, permeation data, sizing charts, etc. SafeSpec is really what we intended to be the clearinghouse, if you will, for all technical information for all things DuPont protection. It's also available as an app that you can download. The app has a different function. The app we really is developed to be focused on the first responder that's out in the field. Why do I say that? Well, the app has got the permeation database in it, and it's got information on the garments, but you're not going to find videos, you know, not going to try and find how-to training videos. You're not going to find all kinds of PDFs. All of that does exist on the website, but the app, we don't want to fill people's iPhones and Android devices up with information, you know, a lot of videos. So the app was designed to put permeation data, product data at your fingertips if you've got a response someplace where there's no internet connection. And then the website, the web-based version of SafeSpec is where you'll find a lot more information. There's videos on there on, you know, how to don a level A suit, how to decon, how to doff the suit, how to fold the suit, and just a tremendous quantity of white papers in the library tab for each of our products. Just to give some examples, there's a white paper in there on ricin, on anthrax, on Ebola, on the oil spill response. You know, when things happen that as a nation our first responders have got to deal with, we generally try and put informative pieces on the website as quickly as possible so that people kind of know the questions to ask and what to think about when they're trying to figure out what's the most appropriate PPE.
Absolutely fantastic. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. If anybody has any questions on the website, where to go, all that can be found in our show notes at the Hazmat Guys. Go in there. We'll have links to all the information that is available. And Dan, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Oh, absolutely. Not a problem. So a couple of different ways you can find me. The first, I'll give you my email address. It is Daniel, DANIEL.G, as in George, .Bowen, BOWEN, at DuPont.com. You can certainly email me. If anybody wants to call on the cell phone, I'll give you that as well. Area code 302-559-8931. More than happy to help in any way that I possibly can.
Beautiful.
I spend a lot of time in the field doing training, doing hazard assessments with folks. If I can be of resource in any way, shape, or form, don't ever hesitate to reach out because that's what I do.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dan, for coming on. It's a breath of fresh air when we talk to you.
Thanks, guys. I enjoy it.
All right.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at the Hazmat Guys. And take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484 and go to www.thehazmatguys.com and sign up for the newsletter.
We seriously look forward to your feedback about any of the information provided, and we also want to hear about interesting incidents that you were a part of. So you can send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com. And remember, any of the information that you share with us, if we put it on air, can always remain anonymous.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.